Have you ever wondered how artificial intelligence is helping solve medical problems? Or how medical research is making it easier to predict your genetic risks for disease? Hi, I'm Kathy Werzer. Tomorrow's Cure, a podcast from Mayo Clinic and PRX, is back for Season 2. Join me as I interview experts who are shaping the future of healthcare with groundbreaking advancements. What they describe may sound futuristic, but listen and you'll find out. Tomorrow's Cure is already here. Find it now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Aging Forward, a podcast from Mayo Clinic about the science behind healthy aging and longevity. Each episode, we explore new ways to take care of our long-term health, the health of our loved ones, and our community, so we can all live longer and better. I'm Dr. Christina Chen, a geriatrician and internist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. In this episode, we are talking about osteoporosis, understanding the risks, how to prevent it, and how to keep our bones healthy. 1 in 3 women and 1 in 5 men over the age of 50 will experience bone fracture due to osteoporosis. It's a condition that impacts bone integrity, causing pathologic brittleness, such that something very minor, like bending over or coughing, can cause a break. Here to tell us more is our guest for today, Dr. Jad Sphere, who has a really unique clinical background. He's a triple boarded clinician in internal medicine, endocrinology, and geriatrics, assistant professor at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science in Rochester, Minnesota. He also does aging research with a focus on bone and metabolic disease. A wonderful teacher and educator, he's my go-to person for all questions related to bone health, and really delighted to have him today on the podcast. Welcome, Dr. Sphere.
Thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
So I know you live and breathe osteoporosis management every day, but you know, for the rest of us, just to start off, can you share a little bit about how does osteoporosis happen and what happens to bone integrity over time?
Osteoporosis is a status of bone brittleness, or what we call bone fragility, which predisposes to breaking the bone, what we call fractures. And this actually happens as we grow older. We develop deterioration in the integrity of the bone. Bone is made up of multiple cells that are constantly changing and in evolution, where you have some cells are chewing the bone. We call this bone resorption. And cells that are building the bone, we call that bone formation. And the balance between the two changes significantly with life. It's really a big function of age, but also a function of sex hormones. In women, estrogen, and in men, testosterone that is at the bone level transformed into estrogen that impacts the bone. And the changes that happen to these sex hormones as we grow older, as well as aging itself, combined can cause significant imbalance in the bone formation and the bone resorption, leading eventually to a brittle bone that can break easily with minimal trauma.
And how is this different from just degenerative bone conditions like osteoarthritis?
Osteoarthritis, this is more related to the joints. So where two bones meet and they usually have a lubricant between these two bones, the joint area, that lubrication can deteriorate with age and cause something like arthritis when bone is rubbing on bone.
I think it's so helpful to understand the science behind that, because we all assume that things change with age, but just to understand the hormonal changes, what happens at the molecular level is so helpful to get that baseline understanding. And how would one know if they have osteoporosis? Because with osteoarthritis, you know, there are signs of pain and aching. Do people feel that with osteoporosis too?
That's something I get asked a lot by patients. How do I know if I have osteoporosis? I don't feel it. And that's because you don't develop symptoms with osteoporosis. Those changes that are happening in the bone are happening at the molecular level inside the bone. You don't feel any of that. Unfortunately, the only symptom of osteoporosis is breaking a bone, is having a fracture. And so this highlights the importance of screening for osteoporosis,
right,
even before we have a fracture, because you wouldn't know it exists until then.
So are there certain groups or populations that are at higher risk of developing osteoporosis so that we can be more proactive in those situations?
So we talked about the importance of sex hormones. And so automatically you think about postmenopausal women, right? After menopause, right, we lose a lot of estrogen around the age of 50, which is the average age of menopause in the United States. And so you start having a significant imbalance where you're losing significant amount of bone right at menopause and in the first few years following menopause. Men do have a deterioration in the level of testosterone, but this happens more gradually rather than abruptly. And that's why we always consider postmenopausal women to be the higher risk group when it comes to osteoporosis. Within that group, Caucasian women seems to be at the highest risk. And right after that would be American Indians and Hispanics. In general, Asian Americans and Black Americans have much less incidence of fractures with age. They have more resilient bones to the effect of aging, and you see it much less. And then one other category of people that always need to be thinking about that are those who are taking medications that may affect the integrity of the bone,
yeah,
or have conditions that can affect that.
I have it all wrong. I thought that Asian women were at the highest risk. I've been worried about my mother, especially because she's very underweight. She doesn't eat much and had an early menopause. So thank you for setting that straight for me.
But something to keep in mind that, and this is something we do every day in the clinic, is individualizing the risk to each individual person.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about are these population-based studies that showed us that in general, white women are more at risk than others, but it doesn't mean that everybody else is protected from fracture.
I see. Yeah, yeah. And so knowing those risks, one of our goals on this podcast is to help all of us recognize what can we be doing now that could be either helpful or harmful downstream. Are there certain lifestyle habits that we're doing now that could increase our risk of developing osteoporosis?
Something to keep in mind is that the skeleton bone has very tight relationship with the muscles, and we call this combined the musculoskeletal system. And also, we're learning more and more that it also has very tight relationship with the fat tissue or adipose tissue in our body. And so it is very important for us to realize the communication that happens between these systems. And you asked me, how is my lifestyle going to impact that? The better muscle you have, the more protection on the bone. The less fat and adipose tissue you have, the healthier your overall distribution of your body composition, the healthier it is for the bone, and the less likely you are to break a bone. And so very important for us to exercise earlier on, build very good habits in our lifestyle to have strong muscles to protect our bone, but also have very good diet and a healthy diet that we're not missing any nutrients in our diet that are important for the bone metabolism. And specifically, those would be calcium and vitamin D that are essential for that bone metabolism we talked about. When we're building bone, we need this calcium and the vitamin D to build healthier, stronger bone. And also controlling any other diseases that may contributing to a negative impact on the bone. One big one is diabetes, because it can have negative impact on the bone.
I love that you mentioned both the exercise and diet component as the key pillars, because those are things that we can be doing right now as early as possible between strength training and being very thoughtful about which foods we're eating that are beneficial. You mentioned calcium and vitamin D. What are the best foods that are beneficial that have the highest amounts of calcium and vitamin D?
Let's separate the two. Calcium, first of all, is actually quite prevalent in the diet. The biggest thing we think of when we think of calcium are dairy products. Milk, cheese, yogurt, ice cream, all when they are dairy-based, they contain a lot of calcium. However, many people are either lactose intolerant or they're avoiding dairy for some other reasons. And so there are other items that contain calcium. But what you need to be cognizant about is the serving size. Dairy will give you much more calcium in a smaller serving size, whereas other items such as green leafy vegetables, kale, spinach are very good sources of calcium, but you need to eat a larger volume of those to get a good amount of calcium. Another very good source are nuts. Almonds and walnuts contain a lot of calcium and are very good sources of that as well.
Thanks for those alternatives. I'm actually lactose intolerant myself, so it's nice to know that I have other choices to choose from. So how about vitamin D?
we know vitamin D is the sunshine vitamin. And so really, vitamin D comes from our sun exposure. Having a good sun exposure means that exposing both arms and both legs to the sun at around peak time, midday, about 10 minutes to 15 minutes every day. This changes depending on where you are in terms of latitude and what area you are living in. But that's roughly the estimated need to get that. However, many people are at risk of skin cancer and they try to avoid sun exposure or put a lot of SPF containing creams to protect themselves from sun exposure. And so very important for us to find other sources of vitamin D in these situations. Vitamin D in the diet is a little bit limited. The biggest sources are fatty fish. So salmon, tuna, mackerel are very good sources. Some food have been fortified with calcium and vitamin D. You may go to the drugstore and see orange juice or milk that has been fortified. It's written on it, fortified with vitamin D. Eggs are also considered a reasonable source of vitamin D. But in general, we don't find it that much in the diet, and some people limit their sun exposure for other reasons. Vitamin D ends up being something that you need to take as a supplement, as opposed to the calcium that you can easily find in the diet.
What I'm interpreting from all this is that I should go to the beach more, eat more ice cream, and fish. I'll just take that away from our conversation.
Absolutely, and that's what I do.
Did you know that women typically spend the last 14 years of their lives navigating health issues? Research says we control about 70 to 90% of our health and longevity, but most women don't take advantage of all the ways to improve life and live longer. Mayo Clinic Press's new book, Ageless Aging, offers a new way for women to age while gaining wisdom, resilience, and experience. Take control of your aging journey today. You can buy Ageless Aging at mcpress.mayoclinic.org and use code AGING for 10% off your order today.
So let's move on to prevention and screening here. For those of us who are at higher risk of getting osteoporosis, what sort of lifestyle changes should we be doing now to prevent bad outcomes? What can we be doing as early as possible?
So we talked in general terms about exercise, but let me be a little bit more focused on that, because what exercise you do matters a lot in terms of bone. Remember, we talked about bone formation. To boost healthy bone formation, we need something called weight bearing, meaning that we are on gravity when we're doing the exercise so that the skeleton is feeling that there is need for it to build stronger bone to support our body. And weight bearing exercise is different than weight lifting exercise. So a lot of people confuse the two. You don't have to weight lift to have weight bearing. Walking, for example, is weight bearing because you're putting your own body weight on your spine and your axial skeleton, and that pushes it to build healthier bone. Biking is less weight bearing because you are in a seated position. Swimming, you're off gravity and is less weight bearing. So these have health benefits by themselves, but not much for the bone itself. And so the first thing I recommend everybody does is really walking. A lot of people feel they've been walking a lot and they've maximized how much they can do. I tell them to challenge themselves a little bit more by adding some weights when they're walking. Either hold on to some weights in your hands. Some people buy a weighted jacket or put some additional weights in a backpack. And this is adding a little bit more weight on the skeleton while you're walking, and that pushes healthier bone. The other thing to focus on with exercise is remember that a big part of protecting the skeleton is keeping us from falling down, because most fractures happen after a fall. And the muscle groups that are going to prevent us from falling down and giving us the best balance when we grow older are the core muscles. Abdominal exercise, upper leg exercises are very, very important. important. And then the last group of muscle that I'd like to focus on are the back muscles. People associate osteoporosis with kind of losing your height as you grow older, having a curved back, a hump. Mm-hmm. Many people tell me grandma had a hump known as the Dowager's hump. This happens as we grow older because we have less and less muscles supporting our posture and mm-hmm. our spine. And so very important to exercise those back muscles to keep a very tall and steady posture as we grow older. Because fractures in the spine or the vertebrae that make up the spine can happen even without falling down, simply with our own body weight, if we don't have strong back muscles to support the posture.
Thank you so much for all these useful and practical exercises. People just think like all I can do is walk, and there's so many more things that we can do. I just have to share this. I am part of a gym, and they have guided exercises to help us be creative with our exercise routine. And this morning, we were doing something called a farmer's carry. I never heard of it before, but you take kettlebells, and I was hanging onto two 25-pound kettlebells on both sides and just walking 100 meters, and you feel the weight on your legs and knees and spine. And I was just thinking, as you were mentioning the weight-bearing exercises, that would be a perfect thing to do. And you don't need kettlebells. You can just use even milk jugs, you know, when you come back from the store, instead of going straight to the fridge, putting away, do a couple laps around the house with the milk jugs. I mean, that's, if you have two of them, that's 10 pounds right there. So
Yeah. Great. And that's what I tell my patients, just your grocery bags, split them into two and then one on each hand, kind of balanced. And then you can walk with those. Absolutely.
So with these exercises, can you actually reverse osteoporosis by doing weight-bearing exercises?
Unfortunately, no. Remember that osteoporosis is a function of age, and we are not able to reverse those aging processes with exercise, but we can certainly limit their impact on our body. Yeah. So even if you are not reducing the degradation of bone that happens as you grow older, by having very strong muscles, you are supporting that skeleton. You still can protect yourself from breaking the bone by having strong muscles, even if the bone itself is still having slight deterioration over time.
I see. So when should we start screening for osteoporosis? And does everyone need screening?
The recommendation from the United States Prevention Task Force is to start screening women after the age of 65.
Okay.
And that's roughly 10 to 15 years after menopause, when the women have lost hormones and estrogen. And so a decade later, you can start seeing the impact on bone and you detect it with a screening tool. However, we need to keep in mind that any adult is at risk of osteoporosis. And so there are groups that need screening earlier than the age of 65. And that would be someone who had a broken bone or a fracture for an unexplained reason, or without having a big accident, a bone that's been broken, or someone where you have a lot of family history of osteoporosis, a lot of fractures in the family that happen at an earlier age, or someone, as I mentioned earlier, taking medications or have conditions that can contribute to brittleness of the bone. Another group we should not forget about are men. I see that a lot of men get easily passed on when it comes to screening for osteoporosis. As I mentioned earlier, the sex hormone deterioration in men happens a little bit later in life, and it is a little bit more gradual. But in general, men after the age of 70 are at very high risk of osteoporosis and should be screened also with a screening tool.
Now, what is the best way to screen for osteoporosis?
The easiest tool we have available is something called a bone density scan, or some people know it as a DEXA scan. And that is easily obtained. It gives a very low dose radiation, but gives us a lot of valuable information about where the bone metabolism is standing at.
I know that even if someone has bone density in the osteopenia range, which is when the bone density is lower than normal, but not quite low enough to be considered osteoporosis, they could still be at high risk, right? And so that's where the FRAX scores can be helpful to make that additional assessment. Can you talk a little bit about what the FRAX score is and how does that differ from the bone density scan?
So bone density scan that we just mentioned, or the DEXA scan, gives you an X-ray image of the bone. We can tell a lot about the situation of the bone, but it does not give us any information about the patient themselves in general. What their age is, which contributes to the risk of fracture. We mentioned earlier that fractures follow usually a fall. And what is the risk of fall of that person? Are they taking medications that can contribute to the bone metabolism or to the risk of falling down? Have they fractured before? All these, we call them clinical risk factors. And these risk factors, you want a tool to try to add more value to just the X-ray that we obtained with the bone density to tell us overall about the risk of fracture of an individual. One such tool is the FRAX. FRAX is an acronym for Fracture Risk Assessment Tool. And this is available online. It asks about 10 to 12 questions. And it includes the bone density measurement to come up with a evaluation of the risk of fracture. But there are also some other tools that other people use in other parts of the world, and that has to do with what other risks are you including in your clinical assessment of the patient.
Moving on to treatment and care, you know, we've talked a lot about diagnosis, prevention. For those who do have osteoporosis, what are the current treatments that are available?
So we already talked about someone having appropriate amount of calcium in their diet. They're taking vitamin D or getting good sun exposure. We're already doing very healthy exercise, strengthening our core muscles and our back muscles. Usually, the combination of these three does not prevent a fracture from happening in someone who already has established osteoporosis based on the bone density. Medications, however, have been used in the past, and we've had about three decades of research that looked at medications for osteoporosis that actually significantly reduce the risk of fracture. Going back to what I initially mentioned with the bone metabolism, the cells that are causing bone resorption and the cells that are causing bone formation, we have medications that address both of these separately. So medications that put at rest the bone resorption, these are called anti-resorptive medication. These are very common medications, the oldest that have been available to treat osteoporosis, because they are quiescing down the bone resorption. And so the bone formation that is normally happening is now taking over, and you're tipping the balance towards a little bit healthier bone formation over time. We also have medications that are pushing the bone formation to a greater extent. We call them anabolic medication or bone building medications, and they push those bone forming cells to build stronger bone and healthier bone.
A common scenario that I often see in my practice is, say, a 95-year-old who fractured her hip for the first time and was discovered to have osteoporosis like later in life. And so the question is, you know, would a 95-year-old person in the oldest old category, would they benefit from treatment?
These are the highest risk patients. The older we are, the more bone degradation is happening. And there is another entity we did not talk about called frailty. As people grow older, they become more frail, meaning they are more at risk of falling down and breaking a bone. And in those high-risk population, the more impact any small intervention can have in terms of reducing the risk of fracture. And so even if we are screening someone who's in their 10th decade of life, and we discover osteoporosis, it is not too late to treat them to prevent a fracture. Especially hip fracture, like you mentioned, but also vertebral fracture, are associated with high risk of mortality. Mm-hmm. And the older the patient, the more frail the patient, the higher risk of them dying within the first year following a fracture. So it makes it even more crucial to prevent that fracture from happening, even if they had not fractured before.
Do you encounter scenarios where people are worried about the potential harms of treatment, who are maybe resistant or concerned about treatment? How do you have effective communication strategies to discuss managing their osteoporosis in that situation?
I mentioned earlier the number of medications we have available for us to treat osteoporosis. Yeah. A lot of these medications have been having kind of bad rep, people talking negatively about their side effects. And so I see a lot of patients who come to me having this background of reading all the negatives and asking, why would I even try these medications? And so it is very important for us to communicate the appropriate research that we've had with these medications to the patients, because you can read a lot of misinformation online. And so asking them why, what have they read, what are the concerns that they have, and then addressing those with the correct research and data that we have regarding these medications.
Right. I love that you said to listen to their concerns, because you get information online that you don't know what's true and what's not, and it creates a lot of fear. So understanding what is creating that fear, I think, is the first thing we do when it comes to any sort of resistance, not just medication treatment.
Absolutely. And I think very important, patients are exposed to all kinds of information these days, and it's actually quite prevalent. Very important for us to direct them. There are very good resources available online. Obviously, mayoclinic.org has a lot of patient education material that has been vetted, backed by very solid research and experience from our experts.
We have a lot of caregivers in the audience as well, and I'm sure they are all wondering, how can caregivers help their older adult loved ones maintain bone health?
Something we talked about earlier is preventing falls.
Yeah.
A lot of the falls that we see happen at home. There are a lot of modifications that can be done within the household that can actually reduce the risk of fall of the patient. I see a lot of patients who have been recommended by a physical therapist to use a cane or a walker, and they come to the clinic not bringing the cane and the walker, and I ask them, where is it? It's somewhere at home. They don't even use it. And this is something that a caregiver can really impact by reminding the person who's supposed to use, for example, a cane or a walker, to use it all the time, even inside the house, because it is very important to prevent a fall. Modifications can be done in the household depending on the situation and the mobility of the patient, but also the exercises we talked about. Many of us need a buddy to do the exercises. We won't be motivated to do them on our own. And so very important to maybe match up. I just saw a patient earlier today. I recommended exercises. She looked at her husband. She was like, we're both doing this.
I love that.
And so that's the motivator to do the exercises, maybe having the buddy with you, your spouse or the caregiver.
That's a great idea. Or getting a pet. It's always nice to have something to motivate you, a dog to walk or a cat
exactly.
to take care of. You
know? Exactly.
Yeah. I guess, what would you say to someone who has osteoporosis, who has had perhaps multiple fractures and have exhausted all measures in terms of treatment and prevention? I feel like there's really not much more to do moving forward. How do you help these people feel hopeful and feel like there's still something that can be done?
A couple of years ago, I had a patient, an old woman who had taken treatment for osteoporosis to prevent these fractures. But some point later, when she went off the medication, she was holding her grandchild and then noticed acute pain in her back. And then investigation showed that she had multiple fractures in her spine. When I first saw her, she was in a brace to try to support her spine. She was in severe pain. We worked with her over a course of a year to give her the best possible way to protect her back, prevent her from having more fractures. She went through a very aggressive physical therapy plan to strengthen the back muscles, to improve the posture. She got off the brace. She was pain-free. We worked on providing with one of the most recent medication we have to improve the bone density of the spine, help with the healing of these fractures, and reduce the risk of future fractures. It's been 2 years since that episode. I saw her just recently. She's in a great shape. Her mobility is great now. She's not in pain. She has a good posture. I told her, this time, try not to hold your grandkid again, not to lift them up. But if they're already next to you, they can sit on your lap. And so some modifications to our daily life may be needed, but there is hope even if we already sustain the fracture with osteoporosis.
What an inspiring story. I love that. Just instill hope, even if it's small goals, one thing at a time.
There is always hope when we have a fracture with osteoporosis, but also we need a multidisciplinary approach when it comes to musculoskeletal care. We don't only address medications for the bone, but we include physical therapy, we include exercise, we include lifestyle to have a multidisciplinary approach to help the patient.
And lastly, to conclude our podcast, Dr. Spira, what do you do personally to live well and age well?
So we always say physicians preach very well, but they don't do what they preach. I try as much as possible to do the exercise that I actually recommend to my patients. I try to make it to the gym and do a general exercise plan as much as I can. But a couple of things that I actually do, which we did not talk about, relieving the stress from my life. Most of us in 2024 have a high stress job. Life is stressful. And so I actually travel a lot to de-stress, go to good destinations. You mentioned the beach. This is one of the great destinations to go to. And also another thing that we did not talk about is intermittent fasting. And I've been trying in the past few years to really apply intermittent fasting, maybe in a modified way that works more for my lifestyle. But intermittent fasting has actually had good data to back it up in terms of healthy aging and reducing the impact of aging on our system. And so that's what I try to do.
Well, you may have just given us our next topic idea of nutrition, intermittent fasting, because all of this is interrelated. Thank you so much, Dr. Spira, for being here today and sharing your expertise and wisdom to the world. If this conversation can help even just a small fraction of the population be more active and protect their bones and prevent fractures, I think this can potentially avoid a lot of hospitalizations, surgeries, nursing home stays, and suffering, and really promote independence like we talked about.
It's been a pleasure having this discussion, and thank you again for having me.
So that's all for this episode. Hopefully you're feeling a little bit more informed, inspired, and empowered. If you have a topic suggestion for a future episode, you can leave us a voicemail at 507-538-6272. And we might even feature your voice on the show. For more Aging Forward episodes and resources, head to mayoclinic.org/agingforward. And if you found this show helpful, please subscribe and make sure to rate and review us on your podcast app. It really helps others find our show. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay curious and stay active.
Have you ever wondered how artificial intelligence is helping solve medical problems? Or how medical research is making it easier to predict your genetic risks for disease? Hi, I'm Kathy Werzer. Tomorrow's Cure, a podcast from Mayo Clinic and PRX, is back for Season 2. Join me as I interview experts who are shaping the future of healthcare with groundbreaking advancements. What they describe may sound futuristic, but listen and you'll find out. Tomorrow's Cure is already here. Find it now wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as medical or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider for any medical questions. The appearance of any guest does not imply an endorsement of them, their employer, or any entity they represent. The views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of Mayo Clinic. Reference to any product, service, or entity does not constitute an endorsement of or recommendation by Mayo Clinic.